Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
How do I do this?
How does Amazon link to City Metric? Workers' rights?
I mean, it doesn't really. It's just like, it's gratuitous. It doesn't matter. But like, I work it out.
That's the beauty of City Metric though, isn't it?
This is a Manhattan-bound B Express train. The next stop is Grand Street.
Mind the gap.
Hello, I'm John Elledge, and this is Skylines, the City Metric podcast. So, last week, my sweary American colleague, Sarah Minervis, wrote an excellent piece for the New Statesman about an exciting day out she had in the very fine county of Essex, where she went to visit an Amazon fulfillment center. Hello, Sarah. How are you today? Are you feeling fulfilled?
I'm feeling supremely fulfilled after a fun Monday morning in which I had to leave my house at 7 a.m. after taking my dog out to defecate at about 6:45.
I can't believe that like you went to like this kind of hellscape where like people are working for minimum wage in this kind of horrible environment, which we're going to talk about. And the thing you keep coming back to is that you had to get up quite early in the morning to do this.
It honestly
because you have chosen to live in West London, which is the other side of London from Essex.
I don't think when I took this job and chose where I was going to live, I didn't think any part of my job, A, would require me having to move, I mean, literally within like 20 minutes of where I actually work. And B, I especially didn't think I was going to have to be traipsing out to wherever the fuck Tilbury is in Essex, and then also even from there having to then go and like walk into like deserted lands into where this Amazon fulfillment center was, which is I think a problem in and of itself for the people that work there. And they have this like fake like, oh, we've got like a space outside with benches and things like that where everybody sits in individual seats and it looks very miserable. I wasn't expecting that.
Okay, so Tilbury is where London's docks are these days. Like the Port of London, when they closed down Docklands, it was largely to move to bigger docks at Tilbury.
Is this your City Metric link?
I just figured
our loyal listeners.
It's City Metric enough.
Did you go to Tilbury as a child, Essex child?
I've never been to Tilbury. I've been to Lakeside, which is the shopping centre up the road. So Tilbury is in Thurrock, which is this kind of unitary authority in the southern end of Essex. And it's a pretty ghastly place. It's quite industrial. There's a lot of villages there that kind of feel like they're just, you can feel the Thames and the marshes and the factories and so on all sort of crowding in. It is like weirdly post-industrial, despite the fact that it's just outside London.
I didn't know there was so much to even say about
That's a very exciting
Essex.
And important part of the world.
Actually, yeah, no, it does. Actually. It's really weird because it is like just outside of London, so I sort of thought it'd be urbanized, but it is literally like just empty fields and seemingly abandoned shops. And like all of the shops on the high street, or if you can even say that's a high street, like it didn't have names of shops. It would just say like Chinese takeaway or it would say supermarket. It didn't say like Tesco or I don't know. Whatever the name of like a takeaway would be. It just like had descriptors and that was like the entire vibe of the experience.
It's quite post-industrial for somewhere in the south of England. It kind of fits into, there's this kind
of post? Sort of,
yeah, a bit. I mean, there's this whole sort of band of it starting in like Barking and Dagenham through like Raynham and out to Tilbury, which is, you know, it's, it's industrial stuff and people are used to work in industrial stuff and it's quite, It's not a rich area. Like, there is money in Essex, but there really isn't money in Thurrock. But yeah, I've never been to Tilbury. I have walked along the Thames from Grays to Raynham. That was a thing I did once for fun.
Was this the interesting, sexy topics that you were hoping I would be coming in here with?
I mean,
you're like, hey, you wrote a charming, fun, punchy
piece
on Amazon.
I'm setting the scene. I'm telling, like, where people.
The history of South.
I'm telling
West Essex.
Well, if you will go to Essex, I'm going to lecture you on Essex. That's a thing that's going
to
happen.
I've spent time in Essex. I've been to South End. I've been to the longest pier in the world, which I think the stupidest thing I've ever done in my life.
It's it's actually not amazing, is it?
It's no, like, and it's also like an optical illusion. There's like nothing there. Every time I kept walking down it, I didn't feel as though I was any closer to the end or any further from the beginning. It really like screwed my brain for a good like 20 minutes or however long it takes to walk like a mile and a half.
It's, yeah, it, like the idea of a pier that's a mile and a half long is crazy that someone is, that's like a half hour walk.
Yeah, and it looks insane on Google Maps. Like it honestly is like the stupidest thing. And it's obviously like built not like to do anything, but built because it's like we will have the longest pier and that will be our USP for this otherwise standard seaside kind of like tacky town.
Well, I mean, yeah, Southend was my local seaside town growing up. And it's sort of a depressing place because, for a start, it's called Southend-on-Sea, not on the sea.
No.
It's on the Thames Estuary. So what, as a small child,
beautiful Thames Estuary.
The thing I, as a small child, believed to be France is, in fact, like some Kentish industrial estate.
Is that, is that true? That Did you look out and you were like
Mom, I can see France. Look. Yeah, sure, whatever.
No, that is so depressing.
Yeah. All you can see is, like, you know, steelworks or something, or whatever it is over there. It's not... So, like, Southend is not, like, one of the... I'm not wild about any British seaside resort, but Southend is not one of the good ones.
Yeah.
But we've gone back to the Essex chat. So, okay, so why were you going to see this Amazon Fulfillment Center, which I'm going to keep saying?
And again, that's another fun part of it, isn't it? It's, like, trying to drain any
because it's fun.
Yeah, exactly. It is fun. Nothing screams fun like Fulfillment Center.
Let's go back to a minute. Why did you go?
There's no other way to talk. Like, it's just so weird. It's not like I was like, ooh, I wonder what dodgy things are happening at Amazon that nobody already knows about. Like, it wasn't like an idea in my head. It was like somebody emailed me. Well, somebody didn't even email me. Somebody emailed someone else, and that person then forwarded it on to me and forced me to again leave my house at 7 a.m. on a Monday morning. After catching what is the charming cold everybody, I think, can hear me sort of powering through right now. And yeah, and then I went...
I think it's clear that you are one of the true victims of 2018. Nobody's had it harder than you.
I know, I have a tough life. But yeah, so
you
then...
You had to take your dog out as well.
I know. I had to take her out at 6:45. And luckily, at least we had daylight savings time, so it wasn't in the dark. But hey-ho. Yeah, no, I went. And to be honest, like, I don't really know what I was expecting. I think I was expecting it to be, like, a warehouse. Like, I wasn't expecting it to be some, like, glitzy, like, manor estate where it was going to be, like, everybody was, like, floating around on deck chairs and, like, casually putting things away. I thought it would be... They would go, okay, you think we're bad, but look at all these nice things we have now. We've got these, like, good machines, and look how happy our employees are, and look how nice our warehouses are. It's a warehouse, but it's okay, and they have, like, a nice time. And that's kind of what I was expecting it to be like.
Okay, so what was it actually like?
I mean, if you all can read the piece on newstatesman.com, newstatesman.com, the website.
It's going to be a really boring podcast if you just answer all the questions like that. Can you just, like, talk about...
Essentially, it started out with, it felt like a very standard PR thing. There were a bunch of people greeting us at the door. We went up. There was a room with a screen. And they showed us this video that apparently they show all the tours. And I think that was, like, a key part was they were like, we're just showing you what you show anyone else who comes in. You guys are getting a very standard experience, as though for us not to think like, oh, you think it's so good, but we do this for everyone, so it's not just been put on show for you. We watched this video. It's very awkward, and there's just, like, nuances to it that go beyond just what you would think. So, like, if you were saying, oh, our facility is the size of 28 football fields, you think you just say that, like, oh, it's really big, it's the size of 28 football fields, rather than, like, really uncomfortably saying, oh, so I've been told by X person in management that this is actually the size of 28 football fields, and saying it through that kind of strain, someone's watching me and making sure I'm saying this all right kind of way. And that was like the here you go, this is to get you pumped up to go into this fucking warehouse.
I am being treated well. I am not speaking under duress.
Yes, exactly. And it was so jarring. And I've actually, like, when I was writing it, I just went and looked to see if they had any other Fulfillment Center videos online, and they're all kind of like this. The American ones, to be fair, are a little bit, like, more, like, as you'd expect, jovial.
I think it's sort of easier to sell these things as them. I mean, like, not not all Americans, obviously. There are some Americans who are bitter and cynical and hate everything. But there is kind of a did you like what they did there? There is this kind of, sort of thread to American corporate culture where you can kind of get away with that. Hi, have a nice day.
It's like, hey, thumbs up. We're fun. It can be okay to work in a weird dark warehouse all the time because, like, we'll make it good for you and we're just happy to be here serving you. Like, it's that whole thing.
Yeah, you can't really do
it's
that.
It's like company
Essex.
Loyalty. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so we went in on this tour and there were probably like 15 of us. And again, like 15 people. One person guiding, one, and it's not just one person guiding, but everybody was chipping in. It was one woman answering 95% of the questions, doing 100% of the showing us things. And yet there were seven other people that went along with, again, 15 people. So there was at least one person to every journal or to every two journalists.
Did you have like your own one? Like, were you aware of someone like shadowing you specifically?
Well, the thing is, I wasn't initially until I started to like look off in different directions. And again, it's not an interesting place. It's a warehouse. Like, it's not, you can probably picture it in your head. I mean, it's just conveyor belts and stuff. But if we had like been in an area and we were walking to a new area, I'd maybe like turn my head around and be like, oh, I'm looking back at that area. And immediately like two people would show up in my eye line and they'd be like, what are you thinking? What are you looking at? Oh, can we help you with anything? And I'd just say, you know, I'm just looking around. Again, this is a tour of conveyor belts. It's not that interesting. I didn't say that, obviously. But yeah, so then it became very clear that you were being watched like a hawk. And yeah, so it was a very odd experience to have so many people on top of you. And again, not saying anything. So it's like the silent observers watching you and only intervening when you do something that isn't directly what they want you to be doing. With the air of, we're here to help. We're just here to help you understand what's happening here at the Tilbury Amazon Fulfillment Center. I think it was a boring day. I think I wanted to leave the whole time. And yet, like, there were so many things that were, like, so dreadfully bad at every turn that it, like, kind of made you have to keep paying attention. And it sucked because it was, and maybe that's what they were trying to do, is that they're like, we're just a boring warehouse. But there was enough weird that you can't really not keep paying attention. It's like the worst form of like Sisyphean torture where you think like, oh, okay, it's boring, I can leave. But then they're like, oh, wait, the machines aren't going to work. Or we have this weird like 20Q security system as though like you're at an airport and you're a criminal or whatever. Like, it felt like a high security prison. And so then you have to keep going even though you just want to go home because, again, you've been up since like 6 a.m. and you've already taken your dog
about, like,
out.
Can we stop talking about how early you were forced to get up?
And you just
like, can we maybe
want
talk
to go
about
back to bed.
Okay, so you said, like, you know, bad stuff, weird stuff keeps happening. What's the stuff? What's happening?
So I think, like, the thing that really stuck out was, yeah, like I said, like, how much it felt like a prison yard. It was the fact that it was, like, chain link fence was everywhere. And even though I don't know if any other journalists have written about it, but just, like, looking around, I saw other journalists writing down, there's a lot of chain link fence. And obviously they say that's for security, but it was at the point where, like, you would go into a section where there wasn't anything to secure you from. There weren't any robots. They say it's the robots that are keeping you secure. But you'd go into a section, there weren't any robots, and you had to, like, lock yourself in from a chain link door behind you and then, like, open another chain link door, and there's nothing in there except for, like, some high-vis vests. So it's very weird and claustrophobic, and again, just full of fucking chain link fence. And there's the security, there's shit hanging from the ceilings, like, robots that have, like, and this is, like, the hilarious thing to me, is, you know when you go to, like, a kid's birthday, maybe it's, like, in a bowling alley, and they give you, like, a bowling pin, and all the kids are like, oh, cool, bowling pin. You all sign the bowling pin, and you're like, oh, fun, a souvenir from the birthday. Or, like, I don't know, you don't sign piñatas, but, like, if you have a thing from the birthday and everybody signs it as, like a memorabilia thingy from the event. They had the robots that are, like, literally just, like, they look like a Roomba, those, like, vacuum cleaner, those Hoover movie things. And, like, all of the staff had signed them, but they were hanging from the ceiling. And that was so eerie and horrible and ominous.
Do you think they were being punished as a warning to the other robots?
Do I have to answer that question?
No. Okay, tell us about the robots, though. Because the robots are the kind of, like,
the robots are fine. They were kind of fun. They were like,
what are they doing? I mean, like,
they're moving small-sized Amazon products around. Like, they're kind of interesting in the sense that, like, it's fun to see things moving on their own. Like, they have a brain. Like, what they do is, like, they've got a camera on the bottom. There's all these QR codes. And the cameras scan the QR codes, and then, like, based on that, they know, depending on what's in the robot's, like, shelves. Like, the robots have little shelves of items on them. It, like, takes it to the QR code it needs to go to, like, get packaged up. So, like, that's kind of, like, cute. I don't know. It was, like, kind of interesting.
And that these are autonomous robots, right? They're kind of doing this without, like, direct instructions.
Yeah, exactly. So that's, like, interesting. Like, that's fine. That was interesting to look at. But again, like, I could have been sent a video of that. And I didn't need a tour of the maze of conveyor belts that I then was given for the rest of the thing.
There were also, like, screens with inspirational messages.
Yes, so there's screens with quote-unquote inspirational messages. And I wish I'd gotten a picture, but I, like, didn't have the, like, courage to say to the woman trying to walk me out to get a picture of this. But even in the stairwells, it's, like, branded, like, an inspirational message, but it's, like, messages that tell you how to walk upstairs. And not done on, like, official Amazon paper or a printout. It's done in Microsoft Word. It's the word art with the drop shadow, and it's got, like, a fun, funky background. And it's telling you how to walk up a set of stairs.
So it's, so, like, one foot in front of the other. I mean, don't jump up one step at a time. Don't hop. Like,
I think that is quite literally exactly what those said. Like, to make sure you take one step at a time. Don't skip steps. Like, make sure you watch where you're going. Be careful of any clothing you have that might catch on the stairs that are enormous and are just stairs. Yeah, and then they have these messages like, have a great day, but it's got, like, these sadistic emojis with, like, thumbs ups. And then next to those messages, it's like, here's how you package a thing appropriately, and if you don't, then we get in a lot of trouble. Hee hee, have a good day. And there were also just these banners up that just didn't say really anything. There was one, and I didn't get a picture of this, but there was one that just said, we heart, and that was it. It was we and a big heart, and there was nothing written on it, there was nothing there, and it was just hanging above everyone. And it was just, as everybody silently, manically packing Amazon packages, I'm doing a hand thing right now, which obviously nobody can see but you. But
we love. we are still people who are capable of human emotion. We're not just robots too.
That is, like, exactly what it was.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So just breaking into that conversation to have a related conversation in this week's Ask the Experts section with Andrew Carter of the Centre for Cities. Hello, Andrew. How are you?
I'm very well, John. Very well.
This week, I want to talk about robots, because, like, we keep hearing a lot about how automation is kind of the next big thing, the fourth industrial revolution, all that kind of stuff. I want to know, what's that going to do to the British economy, and particularly to the economy of British cities? Like, obviously, we've got a very divided economy at the moment. Is this going to level the playing field for us once all the work's been done by robots? What's going to happen?
Well, I think that's the great question, because in a sense, on the one hand, we're looking at what these sort of changes and trends are going to mean at the UK economy level, and automation, globalization, introducing more capital into the economy at the aggregate level is going to be a good thing. You know, in a sense, I'm pretty confident that the national economy will be better as a result of more use of automation, more use of robots. We see that when we look at other countries that have greater amounts of robots in their countries and in their labour markets, they actually tend to be more productive.
So that's all good news then. This is brilliant. So,
but, and there is always a but, because actually, as we know, the national economy is a construct, and actually what we need to really think about is how the national economy plays out across different spaces and places. And there, I think you're going to see quite different distributional impacts of automation and the introduction of robots into the workplace. The work that we did a few months ago showed that very clearly. So in a sense, because of the nature of the job economy or the labour market in different places, places like Stoke and Wakefield, they have more jobs that are at risk of automation. So they have more low-skilled jobs, but a lot of those low-skilled are susceptible to automation because they're very routinised. Think about retailers, right? Cashiers, retail assistants, clerical assistants. Think about people working in call centres. Mm. All of those are susceptible to AI and to robots. And those sorts of cities, particularly in the Midlands and the North, tend to have a more of those as a share of their economy. The reverse is true when you look at places like Reading or London or Swindon. They have less of these jobs, and therefore, whilst they'll be affected, the overall effect in those places will be less. Now, what does that mean? Well, we know that places like Reading, Swindon, Brighton, they are already doing well. They are successful economies, as we would describe them, high levels of knowledge, lots of high-value jobs. Places like Stoke and Wakefield are struggling to some extent already. So the worry is the distributional effect of automation makes things more difficult in terms of progression, in terms of prosperity across the country into the future.
It is funny how, like, whatever possible change you talk about with the British economy, it somehow always ends up with, like, the rich cities doing better and the struggling north doing worse. Every time with this, with Brexit, we just always end up talking about the bloody north-south divide again, don't we?
Well, it's there, and as you say, and it's been, and the thing is, it's been with us for more than 100 years, right? This kind of differential between outcome and performance in the economy is long run. So in a sense, in some respects, it survives some of these trends as we observe them. But you're right, when you think about Brexit, when you think about automation, they are likely to deepen and make the challenges of bringing the country together or making the performance less stark. They make it more difficult, in part because of the nature of the economy. Increasingly, success begets success. If you start in a relatively strong position as an individual and or as a city, you're better able to adapt to and respond to the changes that come. If you're less able, if you start in a worse position, you have less capacity to actually deal with some of those changes, which brings us to an interesting question then about, you know, the role of public policy in trying to smooth out or at least respond to some of those differentials.
Well, I'd like to come back to that at the end, but like, I sort of like quite snarkily sort of talked about the rise of the robots, and you do tend to sort of imagine like some androids wandering around factories like Lieutenant Commander Data on Star Trek or whatever. But actually, a lot of the time, that's not really what we're talking about, is it? It's more like the fact that when you go into your local Tesco Metro these days, you probably pay at a cashier without a person.
Absolutely.
It's that kind of thing.
It's all of that. Right? It's the, you know, in some respects, it's the mundane rather than the dramatic.
The things you don't even notice.
It's the things you don't notice, you know. When you now phone your mobile provider or your TV provider or your service provider, whatever it is, your insurance provider, think about how long it actually takes for you to eventually speak to someone. In some instances, you never speak to someone. All of that is automated and it's AI-driven. Algorithms kind of pick up what you're interested in and push you in the right direction. But so it's the kind of those sorts of functions and activities rather than, you know, the classic, the white robot that you often see, the Toyota robot answering questions to the Biz Select Committee, which is a gimmick, but pointless. That's not really what we're talking about when we're talking about automation and globalization to an extent, that kind of differentiation of what happens where. Those are the big factors that have driven the nature and change in the labor market in the UK and in other advanced countries. And it's likely, you know, it's likely to continue.
What can't be automated? Like, what's the limit of this?
Well, I think there is. So the more recent work we've done, I think you now see when you look at the data and when you talk to employers and individuals, what you see is, interestingly, that, you know, it's analytical thinking, it's interpersonal thinking, you know, it's persuasion, negotiation, being able to read body language, be able to interact with people, you know, where the messiness of life interacts. That's the things that we will probably never, I think, automate, or at least if we do automate them, it won't be for a very long time. So in some respects, it's all of those kind of analytical and interpersonal skills, which actually, when you talk to employees, they are valuing more and more. They want individuals with lots of teamwork ethic, lots of problem solving, rather than kind of more formulaic, you know, activity.
In terms of types of
jobs, though. I mean, just in my own industry, as I understand it, like probably, I could make jokes about this, but probably the kind of stuff I do is reasonably safe because... Yeah. Because it is dependent on like personality and having like and jokes and so on.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're like a Bloomberg market reporter, that's the kind of thing that a computer program could probably do quicker than you.
Yeah. Anything that is relatively repetitive, anything that, that doesn't rely on interaction and collaboration with other individuals and or the response is driven by the response that you get from other individuals, that is a safe. And that's a kind of at the top end. But it's important to remember that there is a whole bunch of work and activity at crudely at the bottom end of the labour market that will also be safe. You know, think about health, think about social care, think about education, think about the rise in personal fitness, right, as a particular industry. All of those sorts of things rely on empathy. They rely on face-to-face personal interaction between one individual and another. That is not going to be automated. And if you look at, you know, a lot of the data on the types of jobs that are going to grow in the future and the skills associated with them, the skills are all that we've discussed. So you're likely to see a kind of big growth in health and education type jobs, at, often at the bottom end of the labour market, don't pay, you know, very much, or at least don't currently pay very much. And then skills and job or jobs at the top end of the labour market that are using, you know, knowledge, you know, at the very leading edge. It's those two elements, the non-routinized face-to-face stuff, that is likely to grow.
Just to wrap up, you mentioned a moment ago that, you know, there's a question about what public policy's role is in responding to this. Can you expand on that a little bit? Like, what can and should government be doing to kind of prepare us for this?
Yeah, so I think history gives us an insight in some respects of what not to do, right? You know, think about what happened in the 70s, began in the 70s, rolled into the 80s, when in this country and in other countries, and the US is another country where you can see this sort of stuff, where we had a fairly large industrial restructuring process where large chunks of our industry, our manufacturing industry, whether it was coal or mining or shipbuilding or car manufacturing to a degree in those sorts of decades, rapidly declined, right? And those sorts of industries are geographically concentrated. They're not everywhere. They're in some places and a lot of people work in them, mainly men of a certain age. And we kind of never prepared ourselves and our communities to deal with that quite rapid change. So the worry, in a sense, or the urgency is, as we see these changes now playing out in these places, that we don't repeat those parts. We don't park people on incapacity benefit, which is essentially what we did. You know, in my hometown of Swansea, or if you go to, you know, if you go up into the northeast, or in into parts of the northwest, essentially the public policy response was incapacity benefit to men in and around the age of 45 to 50, and then it was good luck. And we're still dealing with the legacy of those sorts of decisions. So public policy, I think, needs to be much more engaged in the education and the skill system, the early years school system and skill system, and then through into working age, in order to try and prepare people for not the jobs that are currently in the labour market, but the jobs and the skills that will be in demand in 10 years or 20 years when they come into that labour market. And we've got a lot of way, you know, we've got ways to go on that. You know, if you look at the distribution of the performers, unfortunately, if you look at early years, for example, our best early years provision tends to happen in successful places, right? You know, places like Aldershot, Reading, Bournemouth, Cambridge, they have the best performance in terms of early years. The worst performance are places like Hull, Peterborough, Liverpool, Burnley, Mansfield. Right. But public policy needs to kind of respond to those sorts of questions. And you see that through the school system as well. But it is about preparation and not just letting it happen and then assuming that we'll right ourselves eventually. Because I suppose we will, but, you know, in the long run.
Well, I'm sure the government will, just as soon as it's finished dealing with Brexit, the government is going to be straight on this one.
I'm happy for the, you know, for another reason to get over the hump of Brexit if this is an issue. You know, that will be dealt with.
Andrew, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
And now, it's back to Sarah's adventures at the Amazon Fulfillment Center. You excited? Because I'm really excited.
We were walking around, I didn't say this in the article, but like one of the machines, like they did one demonstration for us, trying to brag about how they have these plastic tape things that adhere very quickly, I guess, to the boxes, but they don't adhere right when you take them out. And they were trying to show us, and they were showing off about this technology. And it just didn't work. And it was just like, oh God. And they got someone else to make a box. And they were like, do you want to keep the box? And you have to say, no, I don't want to carry a box with me for the rest of this tour and take it home with me to do what? And then they would tell us about things that sounded like perks, but which weren't perks.
Okay, like, tell us about the birthday thing.
The birthday thing was astonishing. So they're walking around, they're telling us, you know, how they have hot food on site for everyone, which is not actually... Like, they made an implication that it was, like, free food. I mean, maybe that's me over-reading into it, but it's not free, and one of the staff told me it's very expensive, but it's also their only option, because, as we pointed out, Tilbury is not near anything. And that Amazon center is not near anything in Tilbury. So it is just so detached from anything that if you're like, if it's December and it's like really cold and horrible, you don't want to walk 15 minutes, just buy a cold sandwich. You're like, fine, I'll pay £6 to buy the Amazon hot food. Anyways, another perk they told us about was something called a birthday round table. And they say this like that isn't already going to send out like a million fucking alarm bells. Like, as though birthday round table is the most normal and fun sounding thing on the planet. We're going to all be like, oh, a round table for your birthday? Tell us more. So essentially what they do is they make you on your birthday, and they say, they're like, oh, we get in ice cream and cake and everybody gets to take a break and we all like sit around. And then the person whose birthday it is as a birthday treat gets to sit down with, I don't even think their direct line manager, but the general manager of their section, and give feedback about how they feel about the company. Like an exit interview, which the beauty of an exit interview and the point of an exit interview is that you get to exit after the
interview.
You can say
what the hell you like because you're done.
Yes, right, and they can take that feedback and you can give honest feedback because there's no repercussions because you're leaving. Whereas the birthday roundtable is the beauty of an exit interview with all of the repercussions an exit interview doesn't afford you. So you get to go back to work on your birthday after having to look your manager in the eye and say why you hate your job, or probably more likely, why it's so great. And then Amazon goes and says, all of our employees say they're having such a great time here. Nobody gives negative feedback at the birthday roundtables. Yeah, and then you have to go back to your normal job. So it's an astonishing thing to not only do, but an even more astonishing thing to tell a group of journalists you're doing and act like it's fun.
It's weirdly dystopian, isn't it? It's like they didn't think through how this might look. It is very Black Mirror.
It's really weird to invite a group of people to come into a place and have it be so bad. Like, as I said before, I wasn't expecting it to be amazing, but I was expecting it to be like kind of like boringly well run. Like, it was just going to be very smooth. We'd see the robots, see how everything goes really quickly. And that would be that. And they would say like, oh, our employees get this now. They get all these break times, whatever. Oh, and another thing is that, and this isn't that big of a deal because plenty of companies do this, but they like were also bragging about an hour for lunch, which is not that astonishing. But it turns out that they also, and they said that they have like 2 30-minute breaks during the day, but apparently you have to take those out of your lunch. So it's like, why tell us that they get like 2 hours of break time when it's actually really only 1 hour? Like, it's all nonsensical, the way they convey these things. It just doesn't make any sense why you would then bring in a bunch of journalists to say like, this is our awesome place, like, check it out, isn't it great and fun? And then to have it be so weird and dystopian and have it look like shit. Like, it looked weird and bad. Screens were smashed. It had robots hanging from the ceilings by like fish wire that were like watching over you. Like, half finished signs, loads of security, people looking unhappy and having to like smile at you when you walked by, and then the second you were gone, it was like the smiles dropped, and they had clearly been told by the PR people, please smile at the journalists to make them think that we are having a nice time. Like, it's so
there's
bizarre.
Something just really horrible about the, so this is a thing that's happening like all over the world of work, the hollowing out phenomenon where, like, you know, mid-skilled jobs are kind of going. You're either going to be like, you know, doing a high-skilled job, or you're going to be doing absolute crap.
Yeah.
And I don't really understand, like, that's a big enough problem. You're going to be a lot of people are going to be earning terrible money to do deeply unfulfilling, menial things. Nobody really has a solution to this at the moment. It's sort of adding insult to injury to then expect them to go around being fucking happy about this.
Well, and this
and
is
pretending that this is what they always wanted to do with their life, rather than, well, this is the job I got.
Yeah, and, like, I had a couple of people on Twitter when I posted this article say, like, oh, you're being snobby at the working class. And that isn't it at all. It's the idea it's the idea that the working class is, like, people working in working class jobs are being treated so badly within their jobs. And Amazon literally thinks that it's, like, how they're being treated is good. It's the fact that the higher up people think, oh, this is a good work experience, when it's obviously so dreadful. And it is quite normal, like, to have, like, I don't know, it's not normal to have birthday round tables, but it's normal to have, like, a shitty environment where it, like, is quite gross and it's really grim and you're having to work in, like, a kind of high pace, fast environment where there aren't really any benefits. Like, it's bad. And it's what makes it all worse, and what made it so astonishing to me, is the fact that Amazon clearly brought us in to say, oh, but isn't it so good the way it is here? Which it obviously isn't.
So did you come away fulfilled?
I hate that word so much. I did come away with a foam robot, but not with the shelves on top. So it's literally like a flat disc and doesn't look like anything. And it does say fulfillment underneath it. So I did come away with that. That's all I came away with.
And it's not autonomous, though, is it?
It doesn't do anything. It sits on my desk, and I'm sure it will live in the bin very shortly.
So basically you're advertising Amazon at this point, which is good, because they need all the help they can get, those guys.
Happy to do my duty.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that gets me about this is, like, you know, Jeff Bezos occasionally sort of starts talking about, like, social goods or whatever, and, like, he could do a lot of good by paying his taxes or raising his staff's salary. But that clearly has never occurred to him, that this is how he could make his contribution. Like, he wanted to do, like, a moonshot or something to give something back. He's like, how about instead of that, to give something back, you pay people better so they can have a decent quality of life?
Well, and it's actually, like, not that hard. Like, I'm sure it would end up costing them, like, if you think of just, not in terms of how much Amazon makes, but in terms of, like, raw numbers, a lot of money to, like, perhaps make lunch less expensive, or, like, I don't know, to, like, add some fucking sad lamp so it's not so disgusting and dingy, or replace the broken screens. But, like, in terms of what that is to Amazon, it's nothing. And so the idea that they, like, the people at Tilbury, or I guess Amazon UK, thought that it was so good that they should bring in a bunch of journalists to look at it, when there are, like, so many obvious fixable problems, it's baffling to me.
Mm. But there's, so this is a column I've just remembered I meant to write and I've never written. I'm glad you find my lack of productivity amusing. But there's a tweet from ages ago I think about a lot, where it's like, you know, Batman says, you know, how can I end crime in this city? It's like, well, you invest in education. Like, get me a cape. It's that kind of thing.
Yes.
It's like nobody, like, none of these guys, these multi-billionaires, want to do the boring stuff of, like, paying their taxes and trying to sort of, you know, slightly improve the state of the economy or workers' rights or whatever. What they want to do is something sort of weird and superhero style, like create a Hyperloop or go to Mars, or, you know, just something that is going to get their name in the history books.
Are you just sub-tweeting Elon Musk?
He is the worst. Like, obviously, he is just such a terrible human.
But yeah, like,
he's just such a weird nerd as well. Like, it's just because he's like,
he's an emboldened nerd. He's somebody who got, I mean, he probably King nerd. Annoyed, but he's, yeah, like, he's like an incel that, like, somebody had sex with him, and now he's like, hey, I can do whatever I want. I'm the cool guy now.
Yeah, but he's still a massive nerd.
Keep that in.
Yeah, I mean, I hate the guy. It's like, also, if he, like, gets really angry about having been mocked on this podcast, like, we're going to get so many listens.
Obviously, he's never going to see this.
No, he's not. No, I know.
It's always sad, like, when you think, oh, I should be careful about what I say in case Elon Musk or Kris Jenner or James Murdoch read my thing, but obviously they're never going to read it.
I'm fairly sure Daniel Hannan used to read the column I wrote about.
Oh, I'm sure he did. But Daniel Hannan is no one, really, in the grand scheme of things. Yeah. He's no one.
Also, when I stopped writing it, he unblocked me on Twitter, which is
the
ultimate troll.
He was like, hey, it's me, I'm back.
We should probably be wrapping up, so let's think of a way of wrapping up.
Well, I wanted to make one more point. I actually had a point to make, which is that the thing about Amazon that's weird, or at least with these fulfillment centers, so I'm sure when it comes to corporate Amazon, they do fulfill that, you know, that tech company thing where they're like, snacks, there's a bar in the office. Isn't it fun to work in tech? But the thing about it is they're clearly trying to, like, put that into their, like, very, very base level stuff. But it's coming out in these, like, weird half-assed ways that actually just make things worse. Like, we provide hot lunch, but actually it's expensive. Or, like, at your birthday, we have this party, but you have to give feedback to your manager. So that is what I find, like, the most grim and also, like, like, I guess, like, the funniest, like, it's horrible. Like, I'm not laughing at it, but it is, like, it's so tragically awful, is the fact that they're trying to do that trendy tech company thing whilst, like, inflicting, like, enormous amounts of discomfort on their staff. And it's, like, astonishing. I'm sure at the corporate level it's a little bit more thought through because they probably treat them like people. But, yeah.
So it's, like, kind of all the hellish sort of tech buzz stuff of a big tech company.
But without any of the perks.
Without any of the perks.
Yeah,
money,
exactly. Exactly. It's weird names for things without actually the thing being fun.
Well, I'm sure if you... you can get public tours of fulfillment centers, can't you?
Yes, and I went on the public tour. So you can go. You can experience this. You can go and have a fun hour and a half in Tilbury. Not including the travel there, let's not forget. There's my link back to the beginning.
Okay. Well, if you want to go on, if you want to see the inside of an Amazon Fulfillment Center, you can go on one of these tours, or you can get one of these fantastic jobs. I'm sure you can explore those opportunities any time now.
They're hiring for Christmas, which I'm sure will be a fucking delight.
Oh, I imagine the best thing about, like, working there at Christmas is when you inevitably get laid off.
Yeah, that's the fun thing. It's the knowing. Suddenly, it's signing on to say you are not going to have a job, but it's going to be very horrible for what is, for most people, seen as a fun time of year.
So, I still want to say Merry Christmas, but it's November.
No, it's far too early. I hope you get me on to do a Thanksgiving episode, as if your podcast can just be about anything.
Yeah, okay, well...
I'm going to bake a pumpkin pie.
Okay,
I'll bake you a pumpkin pie.
I don't really know.
There's no relevance. You probably won't be able to put this in. I'm not even saying this for the podcast. I'm saying this to you,
I'm
my friend and... manager.
I'm really concerned that we're not going to come to a natural ending, and so I should probably just stop talking.
But I also think
listeners need to know that your puppy is called Martha.
Why is that weird?
It's not weird. I think it's a good name for...
I think it's a really nice name.
It's a lovely
name.
She's very
cute. You can follow her on Instagram. Hey there, it's Martha.
So there you go. That's a much better ending than that depressing stuff about Amazon.
Also, can I say, this won't make it into the podcast. I'm going to say this. Everybody's making fun of that minister. Did you see this yesterday where that minister was like, they were like, oh, this minister has a Facebook page where she, for her cats, where it's like in the cats, like it's written in the first person as the cat and the cat calls her mummy. But that is literally what I do with my dog's Instagram. Everybody's like, oh, how sad and lonely. And I'm like, I'm fine, guys.
You know that thing where you said that's not going to make it into the podcast? We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Skylines, the podcast from City Metric, the New Statesman City site. It was presented and produced by me, John Ellidge. If you enjoyed the episode, then please do consider leaving us an iTunes review. It really helps other people to discover the show. And, you know, the more people get listening to the show, the sooner I can achieve my real goal of world domination for the medium of trains. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.